I solemnly swear that I will tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God.
Hey everybody, Ron here from The Truth About Addiction. Welcome to another show. We have a wonderful guest, Kristen Cooper of Remember Your Why. I went on Christian's podcast a fair while ago now, and I asked her to come on ours because Christian's just celebrated a milestone in January, which is, I love milestones. To me, without recovery, I don't get to have birthdays.
That's true.
Get to have nightmares. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Kristen, welcome very much, and welcome to The Truth About Addiction, darling.
Thank you. It's good to see you again and get to talk
good
to you.
Good to see you. So what's been happening for you, darling?
Just celebrated, as you mentioned, 3 years sober, beginning of January, January 8th. I got sober January 8th, 2021, after over 20 years of not being sober and many years of trying to get sober, and just it wasn't my time. So it started out, I'm from New York. I'm based in New York. I was born and raised and, you know, grew up in a very loving family. Alcoholism on both sides, but, you know, grandparents, nothing that I really was privy to. So I didn't really see too much drinking except for at family parties. And didn't mean much to me, for many years, actually. So I was very lucky for that. You know, had a pretty normal childhood upbringing. At 14, I tried alcohol for the first time. I actually did not like it, which is not what we hear mostly, when it comes to, you know, alcoholics saying they did not like it. I did not. it did nothing for me at that time. And then when I revisited with it when I was 16, I fell in love. And it became everything I needed and more. You know, we struggle with wanting to fit in. We struggle with not knowing ourselves and feeling uncomfortable in our own skin. And I pretty much felt that way for as long as I can remember. I just never really liked myself and who I was. And it was hard for me to really figure out those emotions and figure out why I was feeling that way. And I didn't until later on in sobriety, really. I'm still kind of navigating that now. So once I found, you know, alcohol and weed came hand in hand for me, you know, in high school, the parties became everything. That was where I could be me. I could feel normal. And it just progressed. College just became, you know, a crapshoot of just go to classes, but really just couldn't wait, you know, to have my first drink. Couldn't wait to have my first pill. Couldn't wait to have my first blunt. And that kind of is what guided me all through school. I was actually just thinking about it today. I don't really remember much of my final 2 years of college classes. Like, I don't remember going to class. I know that I went because I ended up graduating, which was a miracle in and of itself. Barely, but I did. But so much of my life has become a blur from how much using I've done and drinking. Straight out of college, I moved to Manhattan, and that's when things really, really kind of took off, in a really bad way. I found cocaine and, you know, still was using everything else that I had been using, every pill under the sun that you could find. I also found ecstasy, mushrooms, and it just became the way of life, you know, as it had been, prior to moving to Manhattan. And, you know, people hear New York City is, you know, the place that never sleeps. And, you know, it's probably because everybody's on cocaine, you know, like it's very much readily available. And that was, you know, something that made it very easy for me to just get my hands on it. So it just became nights of no sleeping, going to work, losing a job, nights of no sleeping, just how much cocaine could I put up my nose? How much alcohol could I drink? I can drink you under the table. You know, that was like something I was proud of, which looking back at is just, it's disturbing. Now, you know, I shouldn't have been proud of that fact that I could consume so much alcohol. I was a blackout drinker. don't remember pretty much any nights at all. So, which is scary, you know, especially being a woman, how did I get home? Nights, you know, I don't remember, or I would maybe get into cabs and who knows what could have happened to me. I've been raped twice actually. So I've been in situations where it's gotten really, you know, as ugly as it can get. I've been robbed, I've been drugged, because I let all of my inhibitions down because I was just intoxicated and I didn't care what happened to me. I didn't care if I lived or died. I didn't care if, you know, somebody did something to me. It didn't matter. And that's a sad place to be, isn't it?
Yeah. It breaks my heart because I lived that life too. Mm-hmm. And I remember on my last relapse, I was in a relationship. You know, she was a street girl working. I'm a drug dealer ripoff mm-hmm. on the street. You know, and I remember she used to tell me, you know, every now and again she'd get raped and beaten up, and I'd say, "Why don't you go to the cops?" She goes, "They don't care. I'm just a prostitute." And I was like, you know, when you think back, it tears my heart out, you know, like that's how we felt.
I know.
You know, no one cared. We were worthless.
Yeah, and we saw ourselves as worthless.
Yeah.
As well.
That's why we do what we do today.
Yes. Yeah, we gotta spread the word that, you know, we are all worth it, no matter how dark and ugly it gets, you know. And it's gotten dark and ugly for both of us, you and I.
Yeah.
You know, there's times that I remember doing really dirty, low down dirty things to get my drugs, you know, when I didn't have money, things that are alarming to think of, you know, and like I said, the time I was drugged and robbed, I just invited a random man I found on the street outside of my hotel room up to mine because he said he had cocaine. It turns out it was heroin. And I remember nothing except I woke up and I had been robbed. Thank God I was alive, really, you know?
Yeah.
So it's crazy, like the lengths we went to just to get our next fix or our next drink. But alcohol was my best friend. It was my go-to. It was everything. It was everything for me, really. I mean, if I had no one else, I had nothing else. I knew I could get alcohol and then I would feel better. And that's the scary thing because that's how a lot of people feel. And it's really not your best friend. It ruins your life.
Yeah. I was just, you know, sitting there reminiscing, thinking about, you know, it promised so much and gave nothing.
Yeah.
You know, it just took from the very word go too, mm-hmm. even though I didn't understand it, but it took away my ambitions, my desires, took away my ability to strive and to achieve, you know, it's like, it doesn't matter. I'll just get pissed.
Yeah. I didn't really have dreams that I thought of, you know, my dream was where's my next drink and where's my next drug. And that was it. And that's just talking to you now. I'm just like, whoa, like it's so insane to think that that was life for so, so long. And that's scary. It's really scary. And things really didn't get any better for me. I thought, you know, move myself, maybe I would change. So I moved out of Manhattan after 10 years and I moved down to Atlanta for work. But I found the same people, you know, I gravitated towards the same people. They had the drugs, they wanted to drink and they wanted to party. And we didn't really have friends when you think about it. You know, we thought we had friends, but they didn't have our best interests at heart. They just knew, oh, this person can get me drugs or they want to drink and party or, you know, they want to get naked and do stupid things. You know, like that's how it was. And I was that girl. I did a lot of stupid things, but I also just wanted, if you have drugs, I'm going to do it. Because I needed to get high. So I didn't feel, so I didn't have any emotional pain. And that was the easiest go to. So it didn't really work out for me moving. It just became more, it actually got worse when I went to Atlanta, which is kind of scary to think as well, because New York's pretty intense. And I thought Atlanta would be a smooth ride. But it got just, it escalated. And I'd never had good relationships with anybody. You know, I would think I was doing well, but then I'd get blackout drunk. I'd get nasty. I'd yell at people. I would get text messages the next morning, every morning, because this happened daily at night, just saying what I had done, what I had said. And I didn't believe anybody, because how could I have done that? You know, I'm great. You know, I thought I was fine.
Yeah.
But I just became just an awful person, that I can't believe that that's who I became. When things really, really hit the ground for me, my mom got very sick, and she was up in New York when I was down south, and she had a rare disease. It's one in a million that hit her. And I ended up flying home because they didn't know how much time she had left. So she had gotten sick, and she was gone in 8 weeks. So it was very fast. It was very unexpected. We didn't know. It's like I said, it's rare. So it's called Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, CJD for short. And it's one in a million. So it's like, what are the odds? You know? So I was even angrier after we lost her, because again, what are the odds? How could you take, you know, my best friend, the person who had my back through and through, even with all of my antics and my, you know, she knew who I was, what I was doing. She hated it, but she still loved me, which I needed. And I'm forever grateful for that. So I lost, you know, I always say she was my bridge. You know, if it rains and you want to get under a bridge, you know, she was my bridge, and I lost that. So I just completely spiraled out. And I thought, that's it. I've had enough. I need to make a change. So, much to my surprise, I decided to call my dad, tell him I would go to rehab, and to come and move me. I had to leave Atlanta. And so my poor dad, he drove down from New York. He moved me back home. And, you know, I got set up in a 62-day rehab in West Palm Beach, Florida. So I remember that plane ride very clearly. I went down there and they said, you know, I said, can I drink on the plane? Because I knew what was coming. And so, you know, they said, if you show up drunk, you know, it is what it is, but we're going to detox you, you know, when you get here. So I showed up drunk. And then, you know, the detox sucked, of course, but I thought, still, you know, this has to be it for me. You know, I have to make my mom proud now, even though she's not here. That was a big stepping stone that I was trying to hold on to. And, you know, I did rehab. I actually liked rehab. I made some good friends in rehab. I lost a lot of them since, to overdoses. So, you know, that's always hard, because you're there together and you get sober together, and then, you know, a lot of people go out and they use, and that's it, unfortunately. So out of rehab, I came home and I only stayed sober for 90 days, celebrated my 90 days. I drank on day 91. So I did, and I was so proud of myself for having made it that far that I thought, oh, I can drink. It's fine. Which we hear, you know, people do that. And again, that's just mind blowing that I would even think that that was okay. And that I would go back to how awful it really truly was. But again, I thought it was glorious, the drinking, even with, like I said, the rapes, the drugs, the drugging, the robbing, everything. I still missed that life because that's all I knew. So I wanted the familiar. So New York didn't go well when I was back here. I was relapse queen. I went to AA, and I couldn't hold more than a day or two, for quite a while. But I just tell myself now, like, maybe I wasn't ready, you know, maybe I thought I was, but I wasn't at my bottom yet. I wasn't where my bottom needed to hit. So I ended up getting in a head-on DUI crash. I hit a 16-year-old girl. I was a turn away from my street where I was living, which that's what we hear. You're right by where you live. And thank God she was okay. I was a little banged up, but I was okay. You know, the cop said you shouldn't have, you guys should have been, you know, not here. So that really destroyed me for quite a while, you know, thinking I could have killed her.
Yeah.
And then I would have not been able to live, which still for me was, I didn't really want to live anyways. So in my head, I thought maybe this is a good thing for me, you know, maybe this is finally how I go out. So, you know, I dealt with all the legal proceedings in court. I lost my license for 2 years. And it bothered me, but in my mind, I was like, okay, I'll just go through all this and then I'll just drink again because that'll take it all away. And that's what I did. So I just went down the same rabbit hole. I drove drunk again after I had had that accident, which is just despicable, thinking that, you know, I could have killed a 16-year-old girl. And I go and I just get behind the wheel again and speed nonetheless. I remember speeding. It's just, oh, just looking back, it's just, I haven't talked about this stuff in a while. So I'm like, my God, like, I really was not good. I was not a good person. So I just kind of couldn't get it together. And I just kind of was really, really depressed. And, you know, I was bloated, like my face was bloated from all the alcohol. I just looked awful, which at the time I didn't know. Looking back at photos now, I just looked so, so bad. And, COVID hit, and that was just, now I can drink all day because I'm literally stuck in the house. Like, this is great. You know, for alcoholics, that was like a blessing. We could just do what we wanted to do all day and not go anywhere as long as we could get it. So that's what I did. And, after COVID hit and, you know, things started to open up a little bit, I don't want to say forced, but a friend of mine that I had met in the rooms years before, was going to a dog rescue event up here in New York. And, you know, she's like, there will be puppies. You should come. You know, I had drank the night before. I was hungover. I didn't really want to, but I said, fine, I'll go. 'Cause there's puppies. So that's honestly what got me there, puppies. And, there, I just, like I said, I was at the point of, again, I didn't, like most of my life, I didn't care if I lived or died. So I was just at that point of, I'm never going to get sober. I'm never going to have dreams. I'm never going to be able to have real friends. I'm never going to be close with my family again. Like, I'm never going to have any of this. So what's the point? And I met that, the person that I met that day is the person that saved my life. And it was, a woman, her name's Jess and Jessica. And, she had a dog, a rescue dog that had lost both back legs. Someone had cut them off. So it was like a tragic story. And this dog was happy as could be, you know, and seeing that was just like promising. It was a promising thing to see. And again, they said I was the weird girl. Now we laugh about it because I was the weird girl that day because I had sunglasses on, a hat. I didn't want to talk. You know, I was hungover, just miserable, wanting to die. And she and I ended up just chatting, staying in touch, and became good friends. And she didn't take any crap from me, you know, my drunk texts, my drunk phone calls. And we had this 2-hour phone call one day. She knew something was wrong. And I was blackout. So I don't remember, like, I can't tell you what was said on that phone call. She's told me a bunch. But for me, whatever was said that night was, okay, I'm ready. And a few days later, I stopped drinking and I've been sober ever since. And I credit her, like I said, with saving my life. I call her my earth angel. So I didn't get sober in like the way, you know, many people do. But for me, that's just how my story went. And I'm so grateful for it. And I honestly wouldn't want it to have gone any other way because it's what needed to happen for me to finally get it. Yeah, did I talk your ear off yet?
No way. That's gorgeous. I love it. So much stuff, you know, like I'm sitting here and these little bells going ding, 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 yeah. You know, where I'm relating. And yet we've grown up in two different sides of the world in two different lives, but it's the same life.
Yeah,
it's exactly the same feelings. No, yeah. I didn't care if I lived or died. That's why I was so dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
I had no fear because what was going to do, kill me? And I used to say to people, it'll put me out of my misery.
Yeah, because we didn't want to be alive anyways.
And my drinking was a blackout drinker. I'm a blackout drinker. And that's why I was relating so much to. It sounds weird and people just don't understand it when I say it. I went from alcohol to heroin because heroin was manageable.
Mm.
Alcohol, yeah. I'm blacked out. How can I be manageable?
Yeah, that's
people
true.
People just don't get that. They say, you can't say heroin is less harmful than alcohol. And I say, I'm telling you it is. It really, really is. You know, it's less harmful on the brain. It's less harmful on the body. It's less harmful on the liver. It's less harmful on your mental health, 100%. Now, yeah. I'm not saying to anybody go out and use heroin. I'm not saying, you know, swap the witch for the bitch. But something that really strikes me, Kristen, is the first time you drank alcohol, it didn't work for you.
Yeah.
Then at 16, you found it again and you fell in love. So something happened between the first drink and the 16-year-old drink.
Yeah,
some trauma or something happened.
It was definitely probably more of just having more life in me, you know, having lived more life and being confused and just conflicted with my emotions. You know, that's when I started to feel alone and to not like myself. And it's always been a battle of me versus me, I always say. Like, that's been my biggest issue, is me versus me. And I lose every time, you know?
Yeah. You know, I wrote a book last year and I released it last year. I don't think I got a copy close. And it says, it's a story about one man's battle with himself. Because I just didn't know who I was. I didn't know where I fitted in. And because of it, my upbringing was really nasty. My dad was a gangster and all that sort of stuff. But I just didn't have a clue. Yeah, the story of one man's fight against himself. That's what it says on the billboard behind me. That's my book there. That's a photo of me. It's a 17-year-old boy.
Wow, that's awesome.
Arrested on 5 attempted murders.
That part is not awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, like, but that was normal.
Yeah. Yeah.
My dad was a gangster, you know. Two of them were other gangsters and the other three was I had a shootout with the police. You know, the cops came to a robbery and we ended up having a shootout with the cops. That's at 17 years of age and, you know. And then I found, but I was already a blackout drinker. The minute I picked up alcohol, I was a blackout drinker.
Yeah.
I never liked the taste of it. I never liked the taste of alcohol.
See,
never.
I did, except for at 14.
I didn't.
That's the only time I didn't like it.
I never liked the taste of it. I was a scotch drinker.
Mm, oof.
So I just drank scotch really quickly for the effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd turn up to a club on the Friday night and they'd say, you can't come in, Ron. I go, what do you mean? They say, you're barred. I go, what happened? What do you mean? You got here last week. You're in a fight. You got this guy by the neck. And I'm like, I wasn't even here. They go, yeah, you was here, man. You can't come in, you know. And they said to me, off the drink, you're a really good kid. On the drink, you're just an asshole.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean, we are good people. That's the thing. We are good people. We just do bad things. It's a disease, you know, and a lot of people still don't believe that. And that's something that really frustrates me, you know, but not everybody is going to.
I don't know if you've been listening to social media lately where you've got all these super coaches coming on talking about, you know, you don't have to do 12-step programs. You don't have to do this. You don't have to do that. You know, like, you know. No, I did a post yesterday. I said, you know, I'm not being rude, but these super coaches, you know, have been clean for 6 months or a year or 2 years. You know, I said, I've passed wind longer than they've been clean, and I'm not a super coach.
Right.
I've been doing this recovery gig since 1981.
Yeah, and I just want to say you just celebrated 38 years. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you, darling. So 38 years yesterday. It's insane.
It is. It's
incredible.
It
is insane, you know. And my spiritual angel, my earth angel, his 45 years clan on the 12th.
Wow.
He's my sponsor. You know, I've had the same sponsor for 38 years. We've been mates for 44 years.
That's
amazing. We're in rehab together 44 years ago.
Wow.
And he's put up with me for 38 years, you know, like. And when I met him, I had other sponsors because I was around the program for 5 years before I got clean and stayed clean. And the reason I never stayed clean, and I know what it was, I never had faith.
Yeah.
And I never had faith in myself.
That's huge.
I never had trust. I never had trust in myself. You know, and if you don't trust yourself, you don't have faith in yourself, how can you trust or have faith in anybody else?
Yeah, that's true. And I still struggle with that.
So he gave me this.
You know, even in sobriety.
Yeah. You've got to have faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't mean to be an old bastard, but Bob Dylan sang a song, you know, you got to serve somebody, whether it be the devil or whether it be the Lord, you got to serve somebody.
Yeah.
And I served the devil for many, many years, you know, and as I said, I'm an old bugger, but there's a guy in Canada called Dax. He's a rapper, and he says, I haven't seen God's eyes, but I've seen the devil's. And I relate to that too. I relate to that because when I was looking in the mirror in active addiction, yeah, I got clean in 1981. I'd been in prison for nearly 10 years, in and out, full on heroin addiction. And I hadn't seen a mirror. They never used to have mirrors in prisons because they could be used as a weapon in the 70s. That's true. And I got out of prison and I went to rehab and they had glass mirrors. And the first time I looked into a glass mirror to have a shave, I didn't recognize myself. Where did that blonde haired, blue eyed young boy go? Because the guy looking back at me wasn't me. It was scary. It was really, really scary. I still remember today, that was in 1981, looking in the mirror and thinking, who the hell are you?
Yeah, like, we were just mirror images of a ghost, really, I feel like. We weren't really.
Soulless.
A shell. Yeah, that's what it is. We were like a shell of a person.
That's why the program talks about a spiritual awakening. Because my spirit was asleep. And then I got this therapeutic value of one addict helping another. And I got this incredible thing called empathy and compassion. The thing that I love the most today is my ability to feel for another human being, because I say this all the time, I'm a human being first, I'm a man second, I'm an addict, alcoholic third.
Yeah,
and we always concentrate on the alcoholic and the addict, but we need to concentrate on the human.
Yeah, I really like
that. Once I get the addict under control, then I can be the human.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and as a human being, my job is to have a purpose. My purpose is to serve. I have to serve society. I have to serve the human race and become a human being, not a human taking.
Yeah, that's how I feel. We need to serve. We need to let people know about recovery, because if we keep quiet, it's not going to help anybody.
We cover out loud.
Yes, I always say heal out loud. Yeah.
Yeah, man. This last few weeks has been quite tough. I had a friend of mine who'd been in the program for about 20 years, struggling, you know, getting a couple of years up and but he was still living the life. He was still living the gangster life, still wanting to be a drug dealer in recovery. It doesn't work. I've tried that. And he hung himself 2 weeks ago, you know, and he's 40-something-year-old man.
Wow.
And he just hit rock bottom and he hung himself, you know. And I'm like, wow, that's really nasty, you know. Selfish, because I don't like suicide because it leaves the people behind that they're going to have to live with it.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. I get a phone call 3 days later. Another friend of ours in the program gets killed in Bali, and he's sober, gets run over by a truck in Bali, and he's dead. So here's one that's struggled with recovery. Here's one that's in recovery. They're both dead. Now, I just start to realize that recovery is not the be-all and end-all. It doesn't promise anything but freedom from active addiction.
Yes, that's true.
Doesn't promise you're not going to get run over by a truck in Bali.
Yeah, I mean, I always say things don't get perfect just because you get sober. And life is gonna be life.
Life on life's terms.
Yeah. We can't predict the future. So we have to do take it a lot of times day by day. I find myself having to do that, because if I get too far in the future, I allow myself to think too far, I panic, I get anxious, and then it just backfires on me. Really looking where my feet are you know, that's where I am in that moment. And that's what I kind of hold on to on a daily basis.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I only have the now. I really love your motto, remember your why.
Yeah.
I like that. I really like that. Because the first time I ever heard it, I thought, what does she mean by that? And I thought, why? Of course. I remember my why, you know, because I deserve it. I mean, you know, I say to people all the time, it works because you're worth it.
Mm-hmm.
You're worth it. Not your husband, not your girlfriend, not your boyfriend, not your sister, not your brother. You are worth recovery. You are worth the rewards, the gifts that this incredible program of recovery. And I don't care whether it's a 12-step program, whether it's religion, or whether it's putting pineapples in your ears. I don't care. As long as you're staying clean and you're living your best life.
Yep.
Because as you know and I know, alcohol is poison.
Oof, boy, is it.
All chemicals are poison. You heard the story of, listen, I'm an old bastard. There's a story from the 70s where they were doing tests in America on the alcoholic brain. They were doing all tests on the brain, and university students were cutting up these brains and doing, you know, like checking them out. And the professors asked the morgue, can you send us some heroin addict brains so we can see the difference between the two of them? Anyway, after about 3 weeks, the head professor ran up and said to the morgue, why are you sending us alcoholic brains still? They said, we're not. We're sending you heroin addict brains. There was no difference.
Wow.
The damage inside the brain, like the Korsakoff's inside the brain, the damage was the same. You know, that was back in the 70s.
Wow.
And I remember
I can only imagine now. Like,
yeah. The new drugs now, it must be just smashing them.
Yeah, there's no way if I was still out there that I'd be alive. Literally.
No, me too.
No way with what's out there.
The fentanyl and the ice. See you later.
Scary. It's very scary.
Because I was a pig.
Yeah. And it's happening to young kids, like 14, 15, 16. I mean, you hear young thinking they're taking like an Adderall pill or, you know, something like that in school, and it's fentanyl and they're dead. It's terrifying to me.
I hear it secondhand because I live so far away, but I hear it all the time from other people in recovery about the fentanyl crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was in hospital 3 weeks ago again with some medical stuff, and the doctor gave me fentanyl as a painkiller, and it was disgusting. Yeah. It was disgusting. And I said to him, can you not give me that? You know, just give me morphine. I'm old school.
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, every time you give me fentanyl, it makes me sick. And I did. I vomited. It was disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny part is because I no longer have all these issues that I'm trying to cover, drugs don't work anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't get that free relapse anymore. I don't get that anymore because I actually don't like the feeling of being stoned.
Yeah, and now it's
pisses
like,
me off.
Yeah, yeah.
It pisses me off. I remember I had heart surgery and I was actually looking forward to getting the pre-op medo.
Yeah.
And I went there and they didn't give me nothing. I was like, bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they go inside your heart without giving you any sort of medication. You've got to be fully awake. And I remember thinking, this is a ripoff, man. And then last time I went, they gave me that bloody fentanyl. I was thinking, this is disgusting.
Oh, yeah, I don't think I'd want that.
No, we've changed so much. Our metabolism changes. Our thinking changes. And I say to everybody else, you don't have a drinking problem. You have a thinking problem.
Yes.
Change the way you think, you'll change the way you feel. You change the way you feel, you change the way you act.
100%. Yeah, that's what it is. It's our thinking. That's...
Yeah.
Literally what plagued me my entire life was my thinking.
And I say, if you don't think you've got a drinking problem, there's your problem right there.
Mm-hmm. Or if you have to ask, do you think I have a problem? Then yes, you do. Yeah.
People say to me, when they relapse, you know, they come and say, oh, I'm just drinking. I say, mate, I don't care what you're doing. Why do you have to justify it to me? If it's okay, why are you justifying it?
That means you have something going on.
100%, 100%, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, look, I love the message you're carrying, you know, I love what you're doing, and I really appreciate, you know, people that are taking the time, the effort, because, you know, time's our greatest asset, don't you?
Yes.
Not money.
Mm-hmm.
I can't make more time.
Yeah.
You know, the hour that we spend together is gold. And if one person gets something out of your story, it was worthwhile 100%. A millionfold.
I agree. Yeah. And I want to thank you so much for having me on.
No, as I said when we spoke, I wanted to get you to come on our program. And my program's only about helping people. There's no other motivation. I don't want to be a big shot. I pay for it out of my own pocket because I want to do this. You know, I want to carry a message of hope and faith and then trust that if I can get clean, if you can get clean, we can all get clean.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's possible. Whoever's listening, hopefully, they know they're worth it. Don't ever give up because, it's true what they say. Don't quit before the miracle happens because you just don't know. I didn't know my miracle was going to happen when it did, but it did. And, the gratitude is just monumental for that.
100%. My, in rehab in 1981, it was 160 people. I was voted the one that wasn't going to get clean.
Oh my gosh. Wow. And look at you now.
Yeah. And you know what? Out of those people that voted, not many of them are clean.
Yeah. See?
Yeah. 160 people voted, said Ronnie would be the most likely not to get clean.
Wow.
Yeah. And I've just solid, in the last 44 years, I've had probably 18 months of active addiction. So, we're talking about progress, not perfection. And, I've had 38 years solid, straight, complete. We have a joke, my sponsors say, is that like in a row? Is that since you were born?
Yeah.
38 years. Yeah. I'm 70 years of age this year. Like, come on.
Good for you.
The odds were that I wasn't going to get to 21 years of age.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I was out of control.
Yeah. Every year is something, but now it's like special, now it's 100%. Special and we get to do things and, you got to live in the moment that you have it. Cause like, again, time is precious and, now that we're sober, we have to enjoy every moment we have, especially with the loved ones that we have.
Yeah. 100% complete. And you know what? And this is the honest truth is that every day's been a bonus. And every day is a gift, and it is just for today. Yep. I never get out of today because what you said before, if I get into the future, I get full of anxiety and fear. If I get into the past, I get full of resentment and anger.
Yeah.
If I live in today, everything's perfect. Yep. Everything's perfect. And if I live in the moment, come on. I'm sitting here talking to a beautiful soul on the other side of the world through a bloody – you got to remember, I'm an old bastard, so I look at this screen. I'm They never even I went to jail in 2002 and got out in 2012, and this stuff happened.
Yeah, all this stuff. So,
I didn't know what Facebook was or Instagram or, computers were only for porn.
Yeah.
That's all I was for when I went away. All a computer was to watch porn. next thing all of a sudden I come out in this whole new world. And at first I got scared of it, and then I started to realize, wait a minute, here's a platform that we can use to help save people's lives.
Yeah, and this is how we do it.
Yeah, and I believe as a recovering alcoholic addict, I'm obligated to carry the message of recovery to the still suffering alcoholic and addict. And that doesn't mean people are just using. You can be suffering and be clean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Work this program. Get the 12-step program. Get a mentor. Get a sponsor. Go to meetings. Help other people. Be of service and don't pick up no matter what.
No matter what, don't pick up.
That's the big one, no matter what.
That is.
Don't look, Kristen, thank you very much for coming on The Truth About Addiction.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Yes, it was so good to see you again.
It's good to see you again. Let's stay in contact, Don, please.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you very much. I've got to cut this one short today because I have to be at a hospital. Old age.
Oh, no.
Be safe.
You too. Take care.
Thanks, darling.
I solemnly swear that I will tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me, God.